Hello and welcome to a brand new season of Fast Talkers, the show where we take a virtual tour around the paddock to basically have a good old natter about all things motorsport. And I'm delighted to say ahead of the US Grand Prix, we have an American special for you. So let's start off by going straight out to the States and saying hello and welcome to Seth Harding, F1 journalist. Seth, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jenny. I'm happy to be back here on the one and only Fast Talkers, surrounded by some wonderful friends of ours to talk about F1. So,
yeah, and what a season we're having to talk about F1 and motorsport in general. It seems to be a cracking year for every single aspect of motorsport in the States. So next up, let me introduce you to Lee Diffie, a man who really needs no introduction, but I'll do it anyway, because that's my job. He is a sports host and commentator of all things motorsport on NBC. Lee, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. How is America treating you?
It's good. I think it's been the same, Jenny, as the rest of the motorsport world, where there's just been such great racing, so many different winners. Really a season to remember. So it's sad that some of the championships are done, but it's given us a lot to reflect on.
Which takes me on to Luke Smith, who is the F1 reporter for Autosport, but also a contributor to the New York Times. Luke, it's great to have you here. I'm just sorry that you shouldn't really be here at all, because you should actually be in Austin right now, and you're here with us.
Yeah, I should be. Unfortunately, the embassy didn't turn around my visa in the time that they promised. So I was hoping it would arrive this morning so I could still make the plane, but it didn't quite arrive in time, unfortunately. So means I'm stuck in the UK for the weekend. I'm gutted because Austin, it's always such a season highlight. As you all know, like, it's such an amazing city. I think this year, especially as we're going to get on to the growth of F1 in the US, means it's probably going to be the best US Grand Prix we've had yet. So a shame to be missing it. But as I said to you before we recorded, Jenny, sort of as a second prize to be on Fast Talkers is no bad thing at all.
Oh, I don't know. It's a pretty bad thing. But we give you the signed wooden spoon as a consolation prize. And I'm not giving it to you at all, because it's one of my prized possessions. Because does anyone recognize who's the autographs belong to in the F1 world?
BJ Malia.
Ooh. I mean, there's definitely a V in there. So I'll give that to you. Any ideas?
Valtteri Bottas, another V.
Yeah, Valtteri Bottas. That'll give you a clue to the other one, because it's definitely a Williams wooden spoon.
Felipe Massa.
There we go. Felipe Massa and Valtteri Bottas, because we came last in the Williams pub quiz one year. There we go. Well, what happened to the people that came first, I will not share on this podcast and program. Let's get on to talking about what has been a terrific season so far. The championship battle between Max and Lewis. Seth, how's it being represented in the States? Because obviously from a UK base, I know how it's going down from the Dutch, Belgian point of view as well. But what about you, Americans?
F1 fans here in America have been tuning in. They've been glued to the television sets. They've been enjoying this title fight. You know, these two heavyweights just going at it, throwing blows at each other. Very exciting for them. Here in the States, you have a lot of Lewis Hamilton fans, but I've also discovered there are quite a few Max Verstappen fans out here as well. You know, I've seen a few 33s around here, and they've definitely have been rooting for Max and wanting to see, if he can take the fight to Lewis and vice versa. So it's been an interesting time. The thing I love that I've been seeing is that more American F1 fans have been coming out, you know, that they've been, I've ran into them. No longer do I have many conversations where I say, oh, I'm a Formula One journalist, and they're like, oh, I know what that is. And they say, oh yeah, the Indianapolis 500. And then I'm like, no, that's not wrong sport. But I've even gotten some confused with NASCAR. That's how bad it used to be. But now it's gotten much better. Now people are understanding, because they have more access through, through apps, through the Formula One app, which allows you to watch the race on your smartphone or your tablet. There's just more accessibility now. So now more American fans are starting to see, be able to watch the race, because it repeats on ESPN, throughout the day. So it's gotten much better out here than it was a few years ago.
Lee, when it comes to championship battles and the rivalry between Max and Lewis, it does seem to be an absolute vintage year.
Oh, I think it's been spectacular. I mean, and especially when, emotions get involved, and very obviously opposite opinions. And then Max hasn't been shy in throwing some tough words around. Lewis has been very steadfast. So it kind of makes us be on the edge of our seats for the next Grand Prix to see what's going to happen. Are they going to be close on track? Is it going to be another? Is it going to be another round? Here we go again. So yeah, it's been superb.
Yeah, it certainly feels like this is the gift that keeps on giving, Luke, when it comes to the fight between Max and Lewis. So many different parts to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've seen so many wheel-to-wheel battles between them this season. And in the early part of the year, it was all quite cordial, all very fair. And I think we were quite excited that we were seeing them battle side by side on so many occasions. But it was inevitable at some point that something would give. And it's happened twice in really spectacular fashion this year at Silverstone with the high-speed crash that knocked Max out of the race. And then at Monza, when neither of them yielded the position, Max was deemed more to blame and they were both forced to retire from that crash. So it's been, yeah, just fascinating how it swung back and forth. You've got, I guess, the refusal of both drivers to back out of moves like that, which is really fascinating. You've also got the engine penalty situation, which has been really, really, I think, interesting in the last couple of races where both drivers have had to fight back from a penalty and the teams have had to be thinking about, well, when tactically do we make these changes? And I think as we go into the final six races, it's really hard to say like who's got more track suiting them. And again, it looks like it's going to swing back and forth, much as the championship lead has gone back and forth between the two drivers through so much of this season. So it's so exciting. It's great. And I think for so many new fans coming to the sport, so many American fans, as Seth mentioned, the fact that they're being treated so early on to such a vintage title battle, I think is really, really exciting. So yeah, it's a classic season, definitely.
In the past, we've had championships which have actually been decided at COTA. And, you know, Lewis Hamilton, I remember being at the pen by the side of him when Sir Jackie Stewart walked in to congratulate him for winning his third world title, which seems like donkeys years ago. Seth, the fact that there is not going to be a title decider at COTA and that it will likely, in all likelihood, go down to the wire, does that make it more exciting for the American market?
You know, and I remember that. I remember that title when he won his third title, COTA, and that was, you know, it's going to be sad that we're not going to get it because we've for a few years we had title deciders, you know, at COTA and, you know, either COTA or Mexico, you know, somewhere close to the United States. But I think the fact that it's going to most likely go to the end in Abu Dhabi, I mean, we haven't seen that in a while. You know, it's been some years since we've had a title decider, you know, because Mercedes and Lewis have been so dominant to where they pretty much sew up the championship long before we get to Abu Dhabi. So, but I think American fans will still be tuning in strong.
Lee, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you were at MotoGP at COTA yes, a little while ago, commentating on that race. And the riders were pretty honest about the state of the circuit. Is that going to be a factor this weekend? I mean, some of the riders said it was too bumpy to even be safe for MotoGP.
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, even though it's the 10th year for the circuit, remember that circuit, a lot of earth was moved to shape that circuit, the hill at the, you know, foot turn one and everywhere else. So even after a decade, the earth is still settling. Like it's still moving. And so particularly at the end of, at the back straight into turn 12 in the braking zone there, it's going to be particularly challenging. NASCAR ran there earlier this year. They had their troubles. Definitely had the MotoGP riders' numbers, so it'll be interesting in that in FP1 to see what the drivers have to say after that. But I think it will be a factor, and it's one that they have to deal with. They can't get around it at the moment.
Let's move on slightly to talk about the wider American market, because obviously we've touched on it already, but Netflix has been a huge thing. And does that contribute to the fact that we're looking at, you know, a race in Miami for next season, the first one in May, and then potentially, you know, we're hearing rumors about Las Vegas as well. Lee, it seems like the US and Liberty and Formula One have this enduring love affair that now knows no bounds.
Well, I think there is that argument, but there's also the counter one where I'm not sure how many extra true Formula One fans there are. There are millions of Netflix Drive to Survive fans, and I have encountered many of those where I walked into the local UPS store one day and Chip, the guy behind the counter, he's like, when are you guys going to start doing Formula One again? I am now the biggest Formula One fan. And I said, oh, did you enjoy the Grand Prix at the weekend? And he said, which one? What? He goes, oh, no, I just watched Drive to Survive. And I have had that story happen repeatedly because people have, you know, whether it be husbands dragging wives to watch it or vice versa, they're intrigued by all the drama and the behind the scenes. So then when they watch a race weekend, it's like, well, nothing's really happening. They're just cars on a track. And where's the extra drama? So I think we're caught in this funny, you know, in between zone. But on a positive, the sport is the beneficiary of that. You know, more eyeballs, more people saying Formula One, like Seth said, is not a bad thing. I walked into a Lululemon store the other day, and there was a young guy in there, one of the attendants, who had a full-on McLaren sweater on. And I said to him, hey, are you a Drive to Survive fan or a Formula One fan? He said, I'm a true Formula One fan. I'm a Lando Norris fan. I was like, okay, that's encouraging.
Miami, to me, is going to be F1's, I think, step into the mainstream because of how huge Miami is as a tourist destination. It's an international hub. You know, you have Miami Dolphins down there. You have the nightlife. You have the glitz, the glamour, everything that Formula One likes to attract and likes to bring when they come into town. It's going to be a very different atmosphere than Austin. It's a different demographic. So this is going to be huge for F1, you know, and the Miami Dolphins CEO has already started really backing this thing, you know, building it around Dolphin Stadium and putting together a benefits package for the area. Putting forth STEM programs with Formula One. I mean, it's going to be a much different monster than what we're seeing in Austin. And with all due respect to Austin, because it's been long running since 2012, and it's a beautiful track. I know it's considered my home track. I consider it that, you know, it's my home race. But Miami is just going to be a different thing. And it's going to really bring F1's visibility into the mainstream. And I think it has a chance to really hit hard and step in there, you know, and take some space from, you know, NASCAR and from IndyCar. No disrespect there, Lee, but a little bit from IndyCar, and really get people in, you know, into the sport through where this is going to be in the venue. So it has a good chance, but they have to do it right. They really do. They have to open those doors up, and they really have to make things accessible. I know we're in a COVID era now, and COVID has really made things difficult for everyone. But they really need to make sure that they try to invite, you know, as much American press as possible.
Yeah, sure. Luke, what do you think? Miami, Vegas, the return of? We know Caesar's Palace was maybe not the best race in the world.
True. I don't think it would be quite a Caesar's Palace repeat if we did go to Vegas. But it would be that would be another big statement by Liberty were it to go down that route. I think that when it took over F1 in 2017, it always said that it wanted destination cities. And I think that Vietnam was the first one it looked at. And obviously that race never quite came off. But Miami, I think, as Seth said, is such a huge statement, I think, to make from a not only from an American perspective, but from a global perspective, that F1 is targeting these huge cities that have this huge sporting importance, and it's able to put F1 there and really, I think, put its footprint on the global sporting scene. So I think it's hugely exciting. I think that, yeah, could F1 have a third race in the US? Absolutely. I think that the market is definitely growing there, and I think, as Lee said, like, it's interesting to see the conversion of fans from being Drive to Survive fans to sort of full Formula One fans. And I think that the more that we can continue to build on that, the more we can look at expanding the number of races we have in the US. But it's just a really good time, I think, for F1 in the United States. I think we look at sort of all of the metrics, I mean, sort of viewing figures and everything like that. It's all going in a really positive direction. So yeah, it would be great if we could get maybe a third race in the US down the line. But I think the next year, even with Austin and Miami together, I think they're really going to complement each other. The fact they're not together on the calendar as well, I think that's a really, really good thing. And yeah, it's just a really exciting time for F1 in the US.
Can you ever see a point where F1 takes over in popularity from IndyCar? Because I feel like IndyCar is still more popular in the States, more well-known.
Well, it's certainly more well-known because of the, you know, biggest race in the world, the Indianapolis 500. So it's a good question. I mean, I don't think Formula One would become a household name like IndyCar is, simply because of, you know, more than 100 years of IndyCar racing at the Brickyard. But who knows? I mean, it's all about growing, as motorsport people as we are, it's all about growing the brand. The one thing I would say about a second or a potential third US Grand Prix is I think we need to be heads up in looking backwards at MotoGP. MotoGP only comes here once now, and there's a very good reason why, is because it kind of cannibalized itself. There was a race at Laguna Seca, there was a race at Indy, then there was a race at Indy and a race at COTA. And you're asking your fan base, you know, with a limited budget, where are you going to go to both? Can you afford to go to both, or are you only going to go to one? And can those markets sustain, you know? And we know that that's not true, because there's so many people travel to Austin. You know, it's going to be potentially the biggest crowd that seen in a decade, which is fantastic. But are those same people also going to have the budget to go to Miami and vice versa? I'm not being a naysayer. I'm just saying we need to think about this, because the footprint's already there with MotoGP.
I definitely would agree with Lee on that, especially if we did Vegas, you know, because Vegas being, you know, not exactly a, you know, inexpensive trip. You know, I mean, it is a place where you, you know, if you're trying to go from Miami all the way to Vegas, that's a pretty expensive trip. But, you know, a Vegas race would not be bad nowadays. I think it could be better than what it was in 1981. You know, I mean,
we're setting our standards really low.
There are few car parks, you know, nowadays in Vegas. You know, with the Caesars Palace, I mean, it was, you know, which they made a makeshift track, you know, not the best track. A lot of drivers had issues with it. You had those nice 3-foot walls there. You felt like you were somewhat on a street course, but not exactly on a street course. So, I mean, but still, and it's funny that we mentioned Vegas, because it was that year was a very tight championship battle too, between Carlos Redivan and Nelson Piquet. You know, 1 point, you know, he won that championship by 1 point, came in fifth place. So, and now we're seeing something similar. We may see something similar this year with this championship battle. But Vegas would be, I think, a great idea, but let's crawl before we walk, you know, and, you know, because we get excited because we're now having a second race in the States, and now we're starting to think, oh man, let's say, you know, Vegas. No, well, let's slow down for a minute, because let's see if Miami does what it needs to do. And, you know, that momentum that Chase Carey and Sean Bratch has, you know, brought, hopefully they continue that momentum with next year. And, you know, we've got so much going on, new cars, new tracks. So it's just going to be wonderful.
I tell you what has got everybody talking. It's Andretti possibly coming into Formula One. There's the potential that they could buy the Sauber team. And Andretti went online on Twitter and social media and said, oh, big announcement coming soon. Now, Lee, can you just tell us a little bit more about Andretti as a brand and what they're involved in? Because they have so many things going on. You know, everybody thought, oh, big announcement, it must be the F1 news. But actually, they've got a lot of irons and a lot of fires.
Yeah, I mean, Michael and his staff are incredible. When you speak about the Andretti brand in motorsport, there is no bigger brand. AJ Foyt wouldn't like me saying that, but it's true. I mean, you know, what Mario created, and then it's filtered down through Michael and Marco and the rest of the family members. But what Michael has done is incredible. I mean, involvement from, you know, the road to Indy cars for many years. He's involved in Australian supercars. He's involved in Formula E, and just today announced, you know, a new sponsor. That was the big announcement that was coming. Involved in Extreme E. I mean, it's incredible what the motorsport portfolio that he has built, as far as on a global scale. So, and I think he's got an insatiable appetite. I think there's a lot of interest with his corporate partner here to take current driver Colton Herta along. I was just talking to Pato O'Ward today, his old teammate from Indy Lights, and who of course was vying for the IndyCar Championship. Pato's got a test, as we all know, in a McLaren at the end of the year in Abu Dhabi, which he's excited about. And I said, so what happens if your old mate gets a shot? And he said, in my opinion, he would, even if it's not with the best team, he would be crazy not to. As much as we love IndyCar, it's Formula One. It'd be crazy. If I was in his shoes, I'd do it.
I actually saw Pato last week at McLaren when he was doing his seat fitting, and I'd never met him before. I know, Lee, you'll have met him numerous times, and I just couldn't believe how much energy the guy has. Like, he's like a Duracell bunny. He just keeps going and going, and he was so enthusiastic. And again, he was very honest about his own F1 ambitions as well. He said, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't thinking in the future about maybe going into F1, and the test in Abu Dhabi is a first step. And I think it's really cool that we're seeing more and more drivers who are successful in IndyCar, particularly with the sort of young gaggle we've got at the moment with Pato O'Ward, with Colton Herta, looking at a possible switch to F1 in the future, because it's just really cool. I think it would be really cool to see how they would stack up against the F1 opposition, much as we've seen with Romain Grosjean going in the opposite direction. I mean, he had a tough couple of final years in Formula One. He went to IndyCar and he's become a superstar. He's been amazing from day one, and that's been so cool to see. So I think that, yeah, if Colton were to get that shot, I think if the Andretti deal did come off, I think it'd be fascinating. And again, I think he ticks every single box, and it would just be about the transition phase and how quickly he gets up to speed. But I think if he were given time, I think that if he's allowed to sort of bed in and it's not a sink or swim situation, then I think he could be really, really successful. So yeah, again, it's just so much positivity at the moment for the whole American motorsport scene. And if we could get some of these young guys over from IndyCar, who we've seen doing brilliantly on the sort of on the IndyCar circuit, if they could come and show what they can do in F1 as well, I think that would just be great for both series, really. I think it would show the quality that is in IndyCar and also only add to the quality in the Formula One field.
Lee, it seems like this switchover between F1 drivers going into IndyCar and vice versa is now like alive and kicking. I don't know what happened, whether they've had some sort of pen pal agreement going on and they've just finally, you know, hit enough letter quotas or what, but with Nico Hülkenberg going over for a test as well, do people suddenly realize actually IndyCar is a viable and realistic opportunity if you don't have an F1 seat? And let's face it, they are limited.
They're very limited, obviously. I think you can trace back to a few drivers. Alexander Rossi only did 5 F1 Grand Prix, right? So that's not, multiple seasons, obviously. Comes and wins the Indy 500, has been a championship contender, race winner, podium. Then you had, in the timeline, Marcus Ericsson was probably the next one to come along. And Ericsson, now this year was his best year in his third year, became a race winner and was also a title contender. But I think Romain Grosjean was the real igniter, the real catalyst for people to say, wow. So he's gone to IndyCar. He's having fun. Hasn't won a race yet, but he did get 3 podiums and just seems to love the series. But hasn't gone there and blown everybody away. So like, oh, IndyCar must be tougher than what we thought, because, you know, Grosjean had 10 Formula One podiums. So, and however many Grand Prix, I think nearly 200 Grand Prix. So, you know, he's there a long time and comes to IndyCar, hasn't won yet, but having a great time. So then all of a sudden we had Alex Albon in the paddock at Indianapolis road course event. Then we had somebody else, I can't remember. Then Hülkenberg's coming to test at Barber on Monday. And I think, you know, to your point, Jenny, they are seeing it as a valuable alternative. And to Luke's point, it doesn't, as much as IndyCar fans would hate to lose, you know, super talents like Pato O'Ward and Colton Herta, it actually gets us back to the days of a Jacques Villeneuve and one Pablo Montoya, you know, who are two of the last greatest examples of actually going from IndyCar to Formula One and succeeding. And so I think these young guys, you know, I think they're in a good position. I think both open wheel series are in a good position.
Gosh, you just made me think, imagine if Lewis Hamilton decides at the end of his Formula One career, you know what, I'll just go and mess around in America. I love it there. Maybe I'll do IndyCar for a couple of seasons and just see what it's like. I mean, I'm not sure I can ever imagine him doing it, but Seth, it would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be interesting if Lewis did that. I don't, like you said, I don't see Lewis doing that because he has so many other things that he has, you know, put down, like in terms of his life after Formula One. He's into fashion. He's learned a lot about the fashion industry, being tied in with Tommy Hilfiger. You know, he's definitely built a base in that. His music, his love of music and entertainment. You know, he's set himself up for a lot of different things after Formula One. He's put a lot of irons in the fire, and what he wants to do. And you know, I'd be surprised if he decided to dip his hand in the IndyCar. But I think, you know, at the end of this legacy he's built. And if, you know, things go his way this season and he surpasses Michael Schumacher in this championship, you know, he's going to want to stay on top and leave it that way. You know, I've known the guy for a while, and yeah, he's going to want to stay on top and leave it on top. He doesn't want to say, oh, well, I went over to IndyCar and things didn't pan out so well, you know, and then people will be talking about that forever. Like, oh, did you see when Lewis Hamilton went over there and he tried to race an Indy 500? It didn't work out. No, I don't think he wants to have that behind him when he leaves out of Formula One. So yeah, as much as I think about it, I don't see it happening.
I'd love to see Kimi come and take a crack at the Indy 500.
Yeah.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? He and Fernando Alonso in a press conference together, there are some beautiful pairings in this new revised format of putting drivers together to make them face the media. And I'm fairly sure that when it comes to the last race of the season in Abu Dhabi, that's when they'll roll out the combo again of Lewis and Max sitting next to each other, having to look down the barrel of a camera and answer questions alongside each other about this championship battle, which has been enthralling and tough and a little bit bonkers at the same time. And we know, obviously, we've penciled in the fact that they're going to have another crash in Brazil, because whenever there's a sprint race, they seem to come together and crash at some point. So there's plenty of things to look forward to. Just very briefly, and before we wrap things up, what is the future for motorsport look like in America? Lee, if we come to you first, obviously, you know, you look at a broader spectrum than just Formula One. Are things in a really good place at the moment in motorsport in America?
I think they're in a terrific place. NASCAR has had a really fabulous season, and they got the new car coming on board. IndyCar is going hybrid in 2023, and the current car with the aero screen has worked very effectively. Terrific racing. This year was the 16th consecutive year the championship was decided at the final race. New drivers from all over the world, terrific. IMSA Sports Car Championship has been fantastic. A little bit of a tweak with the GT Le Mans class not being so strong this year just because of tech regs, but you know they're going in a direction where it's going to be more conducive to like global GT3 spec, and then you've got LMDH coming on board in the future, more greater manufacturer involvement. So I just see it going tick, tick, tick. Road racing, Moto America has been good. American flat track has been good. So, you know, it's been a super year.
I tell you what, Kyle LeDuc has been my revelation of the year. My goodness, truck racing is awesome. Off-road truck racing is even more bonkers. And of course, he's with Sarah Price and the Chip Ganassi racing team in Extreme E. And the two of them have blown me away. I'm loving it. And that's happening this weekend in Sardinia as well. So yeah, it's opened up my eyes to a whole different brand, Lee, of American driving that I just wasn't aware of before. And it's fantastic.
Very cool. I mean, the off-road guys, whether they do it on the fixed circuits or it's down in Baja and it's true off-road or it's Min 400 in Vegas, they beat to a little bit of a different drum. they're amazing. Yeah, they're amazing.
I love it. Luke, obviously, you know, you write for the New York Times every now and then, and I know you got involved in an article looking at, you know, the impact of Drive to Survive and Netflix on the US market. What did you learn that surprised you from doing that research and you know, looking at proper journalism?
I think just the reaction I was blown away by. I mean, the very genesis of the article was that my editor at the New York Times said, oh, loads of my journalists in the office are like talking about this show they've watched on Netflix. Do you want to do a piece on it? And I was like, I know exactly what you're on about. Absolutely. And again, they are probably more of that they wouldn't actually watch the Grand Prix, but I was talking with some of them and they were like, oh, I love Daniel Ricciardo, or I have this question or that question. And it was nice to sort of take quite a broad picture and write for such a broad audience who maybe might not know what Formula One is or so much about it. And to really, I think, dig into just what got them into the sport. And with Drive to Survive, yeah, it's just been incredible to see the reaction from people. I put a tweet out asking American fans, basically, what do you love about it? And one of my favorite responses was that they love the pettiness and politics of Formula One. And I think that sums up our sport in such a way that I don't think I possibly could have, because it hit the nail on the head. That I think they just conveyed it in such a brilliant way to say to fans, look, it's more than just racing on a Sunday, going around in circles, tire compounds, front wings, rear wings. There's so much more of a story to it, which obviously it's our job as journalists to tell. So I think that was really, really exciting. And it was just great to see the reaction from it. And when the article went out again, just how many of the US fans were really sort of really felt like it met exactly what they felt about the show. And I think sort of looking at the wider US racing scene, again, from the UK even, we can see it growing so, so much. And obviously the US has always had these big blue ribbon events. The Indy 500, as Lee said, is the biggest race in the world. The 24 Hours Daytona, the Rolex 24, again, that's just another big bucket list race for every single racing driver. And it's things like that that I think that it's only growing, that we're not only tuning into IndyCar just to see the Indy 500 now. We're watching the full season. We're seeing that finale that was at Long Beach this year. Again, it was a really, really exciting one. We didn't know which way it would swing heading into the race weekend. And I'm just really excited about what the future holds. I think Drive to Survive has helped F1 make more of a foothold in the US. I think Miami will only continue to build on that. But it all sort of speaks to this wider picture of, yeah, IndyCar, NASCAR, IMSA, that it's all going in such a positive direction for motorsports as a whole in the United States.
Seth, just finally, give us your perspective as a, you know, an American in America and surrounded by this, you know, new passion for motorsport, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak on what Luke was saying about Drive to Survive. I mean, yeah, while it has its criticisms from the diehard fans, it's helping bring in, you know, the demographic that F1 wants to get. They want to get the new fan. They want to get the fan that's not a petrol head. That's not, you know, they want to bring in new audiences. And to do that, yeah, you have to come up with a show that's going to show more than just cars racing around a track. That is going to be about the drivers. It's going to be some drama involved. It's going to take us behind the scenes, peel back that curtain and go into these guys' lives and what goes on. And yeah, you know, I've heard nitpicking here and there about, oh, well, you know, the timelines are out of sync and, you know, oh, this is a little too dramatic. But that's, you know, that's what fans, new fans like. That's what they want to see. We get into talking about all the technical aspects of the sport. People, you know, new fans are not going to understand it. They're not going to understand what MGUK or MGUK is and DRS and DED and DZ and you have to break it down for them. You have to take them somewhere else other than the technical side of Formula One. It's a very technical sport. But when you get into the drivers' lives, the things that for American fans, we like to hear about, you know, people love LeBron James because they know more about LeBron James than just he's a guy that plays basketball. They know about the things he's involved in. They know about the causes he's involved in. The personal aspect of his life, people are attracted to. They may not know much about basketball, but they love LeBron James. And that could be said for Lewis Hamilton, for what he's done, what he did all last year, and what he's been doing throughout his career, you know, with being an activist. Now we're seeing that from Sebastian Vettel. And people are starting to understand and get into these guys because of the things that they're getting into. More than just saying, hey, okay, well, these guys just race cars for a living. You know, people, American fans, and especially younger American fans, want to know more than that. They want to know more than just, oh, you just drive a car? What else do you do? You know, so... they're on a right track with doing shows like Drive to Survive and other specials and pieces that they do that take us behind the scenes and that really show us what these guys do, what these guys are about, who they are, as opposed to just saying, hey, let's just watch a race on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, getting under the visor, so important when it comes to motorsport and especially F1 at the moment. We're going to wrap things up, but... horrible question time. Who is going to win the championship this year? Haha. You knew it was coming. Come on, it's obvious. So Seth, then Luke, then Lee, who by the end of Abu Dhabi will be holding the trophy aloft and celebrating?
Well, I think we're seeing a battle between, you know, experience and youth. So right now I'm going to put my money on experience. While Max has had an aggressive approach to this championship, sometimes you have to sit back and maybe step back a little bit, but I'm not sure if Max is there yet. That aggressive approach might be his undoing. So, and I think Lewis is going to stay cool, calm, and collective and, you know, take his 8th world championship and make history as he has been for these past years.
It's so close. I'm going to say Max just, I think that, the remaining tracks maybe favor Red Bull a little bit more. I think Kota this weekend will probably be a Mercedes track. But yeah, I think you look at Mexico, you look at Interlagos, Qatar, Abu Dhabi. I think that'll maybe play a bit more towards Red Bull's strengths. I definitely don't think they're as strong as they were a few weeks ago. I think that in the last couple of months that Mercedes has got on top of things a little bit more. But yeah, I think Max and Red Bull just have a little bit too much for Lewis and Mercedes. But I think we've come to learn in F1 over the years, you really can't write off Lewis Hamilton at any point. So it's going to go right to the wire, but I'm going to say Max just.
Key decision-making, experience, and listening to your team in intense and crucial moments is what Lewis Hamilton does, and that's why Lewis Hamilton's going to be an 8-time world champion at the end of this year.
Love it. Do you know what? I've said Lewis Hamilton all along, so I can't change my mind now. And I actually don't think I'm going to, because I think Mercedes have just found another level. They've kicked on. And I think this weekend, you know, it's got Hamilton written all over it, hasn't it, this weekend. Bottas will probably take an engine penalty, start from the back, work his way up. He'll end up on the podium alongside Max. And I love Max. I'd love to see a new world champion, but I just cannot, when push comes to shove and we're down in Abu Dhabi, I just can't see it happening. But that's the great thing. We don't know. For once, we don't know what's going to happen in a championship, and that's so refreshing. I love it. Right, guys, I'm going to wrap things up. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us at lunch in America. And Luke, thank you for staying up late for me.
It's okay.
I appreciate it. I hope everybody has a really enjoyable weekend. That's the most important thing. And that the racing is great. Let's hope for that. Guys, thanks and bye for now.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny.